This is The God Show, a conversation about the human spirit with your host, Pat McMahon.
Hi. Hey, listen, I've got to tell you in advance that this is one of those shows that you're going to have to kind of trust me on, because initially, as I did last week when we were talking about the wonders of hospice care with one of the people from Hospice of the Valley here in Phoenix, Arizona, and how much broader hospice care can be than most people think until they hear about somebody that's doing it as Hospice of the Valley has been for so many years. Well, this is one of those subjects that initially I'm going to tell you has to do with grief, dying, and the passing of those who are close to us. Don't turn the dial. Don't go to any of those other places, because you're not going to learn as much over there. Wherever you're living on the planet, I can guarantee you that at the end of this hour, you will know more about not necessarily the act of dying, but how to talk to the kids about it. Oh, really? Well, you don't hear that much about that subject very often, do you? And that's one of the reasons why it is that most of us are abject failures about answering the question, but why doesn't grandma come by anymore? Or, now that grandma's dead, where is she? Did she go to heaven? Well, if heaven is so wonderful and heaven is the best place to be, when can I go? And all of those kinds of questions. Oh, you've already heard about some of those? Did you come up with an answer yet? Well, you know what? You may at the end of this hour. Because Lisa Schmidt is here. She's director of the New Song Center for Grieving Children. How in the world, Lisa, did you get to the New Song Center for Grieving Children?
Well, Pat, it was quite a circuitous way. I was a former broadcaster, and I was an advertising salesperson, and had a lot of fun doing all that. But I left the broadcast business when my daughter was a young adolescent, and I wasn't really sure what I wanted to do when I was going to grow up. I wasn't really sure. And so I had been on the board of directors of the New Song Center for 3 years. And a then-current board member called me and said, hey, Lisa, I understand you're not currently doing what you've been doing for your whole career, and we need somebody to help us out. Could you maybe step in for a little while to you know, answer the phones and maybe balance the checkbook and, you know, just hold the fort down temporarily until we figure this thing out? And that was nearly 20 years ago, Pat.
But you didn't have any more answers than the rest of us did at that time.
Exactly. No, none.
And they provided you at least with enough material for when you answered the phone and somebody said, what do I tell Jimmy about grandma?
Well, interestingly, I told them that I would be happy to balance the checkbook and answer the phone, but if it was someone that had any serious questions, or heaven forbid, somebody who was actually grieving a death and raising children who were grieving a death, that was not going to be my cup of tea. And in fact, if they insisted that I take the training to learn about these things, that I was really not their girl.
But you've been doing it now for how long?
Almost 20 years.
And who are the children that you serve?
We serve all of the children in Maricopa County, Phoenix, Arizona metropolitan area. Mm-hmm. Any child who is grieving the death of anyone that they had a relationship with, which means it could be a mother or father who has died, a grandparent, a neighbor down the street, a best friend in school. As long as the child has a relationship with the person who has died, then those children ages 4 and older, all the way up to young adults, and their parent or guardian are welcome in our program.
Now, that's very important. I want to make sure that everybody in the audience heard that you're talking about children who are at least old enough to communicate.
Yes.
To young adult. I think that comes as a surprise.
Yes, yes. Well, our young adult program is one of our newer programs and came about the same way New Song came about to begin with, which is the three women who got together to talk about the needs of children who were grieving and who recognized that apart from private therapists, there was no service to support these children anywhere in town. And so they hatched this gem of an idea. We are the second agency to open its doors in the country. There's one agency called the Dougie Center up in Portland, Oregon, and they're the grandmother, grandfather of us all. And now there are hundreds of agencies like the New Song Center all over the country. I just got back from San Antonio at a national conference that was at capacity, over 500 individuals who all work or volunteer at agencies like the New Song Center from all over the country and even out of the country now. So
and
it is a
New Song was there right at the beginning.
Yes.
Which was when?
1989 is when we opened our doors.
Why did the three women get together and start this to begin with?
Well, one was a psychologist, and one was a volunteer, and one was an educator. And they all were looking at and serving children in various capacities in churches or in their community that they recognized children were grieving, and they had nowhere to turn. And so these women said, This is a need that's not being met. There were literally no other agencies at that time apart from private therapists. And so they said, let's create an environment where children are the focus of our work, meeting the needs of children who are grieving. If you're old enough to love, and I've told you this before, if you're old enough to love, you're old enough to grieve. And even clinical studies have shown infants who respond when the environment changes. So they designed this curriculum to meet the needs of children as young as 4 and 5 years of age, all the way up through teens primarily, and then we added that young adult component, to give a child a safe, supportive environment so that they can process these feelings. Because here's the thing, you know, when we're children and we get something that happens to us that's unexpected and we have a big emotional reaction to that, when somebody that we love dies, that emotional reaction is about 100 times larger than any emotional experience we might ever have experienced prior to that. And for a small child, what to do with all of that emotional energy is scary. And so providing them an opportunity to acknowledge and express that experience and talk about their feelings and not only talk, because the younger the child, the less they are likely to talk about it, but to allow them to externalize what's going on internally in terms of what they're feeling is an environment that allows them to begin to process that in a healthy way.
Because the loss of someone close to an individual or a family, that loss has an emotional effect and a physical effect. And also a spiritual effect.
Absolutely.
And that's one of the reasons why it is that we want to cover issues like this, subjects like this, and needs like this, and services like this on The God Show. So wherever you are, you know what? The reality is, if you haven't lost anybody in your life at all, my goodness, how fortunate you are. But that's not going to last forever, because we don't last forever. And when there is a loss in the family, are you prepared to know exactly what to say to the children in the family, the teenagers in the family, the young adults in the family? That's why we're here today. The God Show, brand new every week, Sunday morning at 8 o'clock, and then in perpetuity, forever and ever and ever, whether you like it or not, all you have to do is say, you know what? Remember 11 years ago when that lady was on talking about grief and how to communicate with children? How do I find that? Well, it's simply dial us in, the Star Worldwide Networks, starworldwidenetworks.com, wherever you are, and you'll be able to hear this and all of these shows that have gone before. Now, the services themselves of the New Song Center for Grieving Children consist of what? What do you do specifically for the kids?
Well, in a global sense, Pat, what we do is we create a safe and supportive environment, an emotionally safe environment, where children are in small groups with other children their same age and development, so that if you're a 5, 6, or 7-year-old, you're with other 5, 6, and 7-year-olds, and you're guided through a series of experiences and activities by adults who have been trained and who have given of their time. So this is a volunteer-driven organization that are developmentally designed to meet a child at that age where they are in their grief, to allow primarily for the external expression of the internal feeling. So when we're grieving, when someone we love dies, we have an emotional response to that. It's an internal emotional response. And depending upon our background and our family culture and our national culture, we have appropriate ways that we can externalize those feelings that go on inside of us. For most of us as grown-ups, the natural thing that comes to our mind is we're sad and we may cry and we may long for the presence of that person. The absence of the presence of that person is what we experience. Children don't quite do grief the same as we grown-ups do most of the time. So parents are frequently calling us saying, you know, my husband died and my 10-year-old son hasn't shed a single tear and it's been weeks. Is he normal? Mm-hmm. I expected him to cry. And so our expectations of our children are not always the way, because children grieve behaviorally, they grieve cognitively, they grieve physically. You've already addressed a couple of those things. They grieve spiritually. So there's so many other ways, and we see their grief most often in their behaviors, in the way they act out. And I don't say act out in necessarily a negative way, but just the way that they're behaving. They may be more expressive. They may act out in the negative terms, but they may also shut down. One of the things that most parents are surprised about is that as a parent, our instincts are to provide for and to protect our children from the harsh realities of the world, right? But what they don't recognize is that their children also want to protect them, the parent, from any further emotional distress. And I was just on the phone this morning with a mom who has 2 children, and she recognizes immediately the idea that she wants to protect her children. But she didn't even think about the fact that they will not show her their grief or talk through those things with her because they don't want to make it harder for her either.
They don't want to make mommy sad.
They don't want to make mommy sad. In fact, I had somebody say that to me recently. And I said, you can't make me sad. I'm already sad. You give me an opportunity.
Why did they say that to you?
They didn't want to talk to me about the fact that my husband has recently died. And he died in March of this year after a number of years of illness and health declines. His death was on Hospice of the Valley Care, the show you mentioned earlier. And he got wonderful, wonderful care from the loving hands of the people who work at Hospice of the Valley. And yet, even still, people are afraid to talk to you about it, to look you in the eye and say, wow, they don't want to talk about it. And the same with children. They don't want to talk to children about it because they don't know what to say and they're afraid they're going to say the wrong thing.
We avoid contact with anyone who's grieving quite commonly, don't
yes.
we?
Yes. And in fact, this mother I was speaking with this morning, she said that the school district failed her children in that they were told that they were the only children in the entire district who had had a parent die that year. And that further created a greater sense of isolation. And I think that's one of the biggest challenges that we face with children is they don't know anyone else who may have had a mom die or a dad die or a brother or sister die too. And so children feel very, very isolated. And that group setting where they see other children their same age who get it, and they get it at a cellular level. It's this sense of, they know. They know exactly what I'm going through.
Boy, what a specialized kind of counseling you and your associates offer. How much does it cost?
At New Song Center, all of the services that we'll talk about today, every service we provide is provided at no cost to the participants.
Somebody has to pay for the staff.
Well, Hospice of the Valley, our parent organization, which is a 501c3 not-for-profit, provides for the staffing that is keeping New Song going. And that is funded through the charity care that is provided by the community in which we live. The people who are generous and philanthropic, the grants, the corporate giving, all of those kinds of things, is that's what supports
and,
our agency.
And in our community, Lisa, you've been a part of it for a long time. One of the most common forms of generosity manifests itself with organizations that are derivatives of groups like Hospice of the Valley and yours. Because who's going to argue the value of taking care of the people who are grieving?
Exactly.
But especially kids. It's one of those things, and it's one of the reasons why it is that I wanted to have you on today. Because I think most of us, and I don't mean to get into some kind of debate on a percentile basis, but I'm going to guess that most of us don't feel qualified to talk to kids about death.
And I felt that way as well, like I shared with you when I came on staff. I wasn't comfortable with the topic. I wasn't trained. I didn't feel like I had anything that I could contribute. And yet, at the very basic level, each of us, I mean, if I go out and do a workshop or a presentation or a training and I ask for a show of hands, virtually, if it's an adult audience, 100% of the hands go up because we have all experienced the death of a loved one of some generation, whether it's an elderly grandparent or a spouse. Many people have experienced a death of a child or a sibling. And so it is far more common in the human condition, and yet it is a taboo. Think about all the many ways that we try to avoid saying someone has died. We say everything but the D word. And so it's our adult way to try and soften and be gracious, whereas children, the younger the child, the more true this is, are very concrete thinkers. If you've been around, I have a lovely grandchild who is 15 months old, and oh, yes, I'd be happy to spend the rest of the show talking about her. However, she's very, very concrete. And so she comes to my house, and she knew her grandpa, and she'll go up to a picture of Gus, and she will give it a kiss. And she'll go, hi, Grandpa. Hi, Grandpa. And she's perfectly comfortable in that setting. It's the emotions that we adults are uncomfortable with that we put onto children so often.
But how else do children grieve differently than adults?
Well, they're so much more expressive, and they're so much more in the present. In my grief experience, I've seen adults who have, you know, we wake up in the morning after someone we love has died, and it's often the very first thing we think of, and it's typically the very last thing we think of when we go to bed at night. Children will be moving into and out of their grief, sometimes at a pace that would almost make your head spin, because it's sort of in their DNA, and I use that loosely, that's not factual, but just in the sense that the way they're made up, they move into and out of it. So parents will have news to share about a death, and they'll bring the children in, and it'll be a solemn, quiet moment, and they'll sit everybody down, and they'll think they're going to be having this long, detailed conversation about so-and-so who died. And they'll say that, and then the children will go, okay, can I go out and play now? And it's not because they're not interested and they're not affected, but it's their ability to move into and out of their grief more rapidly than
and
we
grown-ups don't understand that.
Not
reaction.
At all. We miss that altogether most of the time.
Almost as if they're unfeeling.
Exactly. And when parents call and say, my son hasn't cried because his dad died, they think there's something wrong with the son, when in fact, tears are not typically the first reaction. Or when a mother is at the grocery store with her toddler, and the toddler is sitting in the grocery cart going down the aisles, and the mom's barely able to hold it together emotionally, and the toddler looks over at a random stranger and says, hey, my daddy died. And the mom is just a mess, but to a child, it's just a communication form. It's just the way the child is in the moment, present right there, and that's a natural behavior for a young toddler to be so concrete about what's going on.
When should a parent be concerned about the response of a child to death?
You know, that's a tricky one to answer, in that no one knows your child better than you do. And so there are some red flags for complicated grief or unexpressed grief or unresolved attention to grief. And it's in words like prolonged or persistent. So if you have those those dark and negative thoughts. We all have dark and negative thoughts after someone we love has died. But if they're persistent, if a child is unable to regain the momentum in the classroom and be able to spend some time focusing on their work and being able to do their schoolwork, if they have completely departed from their normal set of friends and moved to a totally different set of friends, or they've completely isolated and it's prolonged and it's persistent, if those intrusive thoughts that come that prevent them from functioning well in their day-to-day normal activities, if they withdraw from the normal activities that they're involved in, if they're an athlete and they no longer want to play football, if they're a swimmer and they no longer want to do that, if they're in drama and they no longer want. So you see persistent and prolonged significant changes in the natural nature of your child, that would be something to be concerned about.
If there's an extended illness involved, then do you recommend that we take some of that time for preparation?
Absolutely, Pat. One of the things that our culture has taught for so long that we try to overcome now is that children should be told the truth at the earliest possible moment. And one of my horror stories, I was doing a workshop with educators in an elementary school, and there was a mom with two children in the school. One was a twin and one was the older sister, and the twin sibling had died. And the mother prevented the school faculty from knowing and had not told the children. So the children kept wanting to see the twin sister who was supposedly sick in the hospital, and they couldn't go see.
The schoolmates didn't know.
The schoolmates didn't know. The psychologist at the school was not permitted to tell the rest of the faculty. It was just one of my worst nightmares. But we always advocate and help families talk at a developmentally appropriate level to their children to explain what's going on, so that children can know and can be involved in a way that they feel comfortable. And we help families with those kinds of conversations so that children, even under the most horrific kinds of circumstances, so we're talking about a long illness, children can be involved and be aware of that. But we also serve families, Pat, who have had a loved one who have completed suicide or has been killed by a homicide. Those ugly, traumatic death losses, the things that hit that 10 o'clock news, are the kind of stories that also need to be told in the truth to the child at the earliest possible level. And the reason for that is simply this. If you're the adult that that child trusts and you don't tell the child the truth from the beginning, it is not a question of if. It is a matter of when they learn. And with social media and so much out there today, children will get information. And oftentimes it's not even the quote-unquote evil social media that everybody likes to bash. It's because they overheard Aunt Nellie whispering to Aunt Joan in the other room. So it's often coming from within the family circle itself, and children have wonderful instincts. And so if you're the adult that child trusts and you have not told the truth and they find out that you have not told the truth, then that trust is broken, and it takes a lot longer to rebuild that trust. So developmentally appropriate truth-telling from the earliest possible moment. In the most simple and direct way, children can navigate that information. And the other thing is helping parents and loved ones tell children when they don't know. We adults want to be able to have all the answers, and we want to be able to tell children why things happen and what's happening and all those kinds of details. And there are many cases when someone is dying or has died that we cannot answer the age-old, God-like question, why? And to be able to say honestly to a child, I don't understand this either, but this is what's happened, and together we will navigate this. So you become a partner with the child as opposed to the fixer, because when someone's died, there's no fixing that, right?
If it's a sudden, violent death, right? Such as what you were talking about, I know that there are people listening right now, and I understand their concern about shocking the child, that to tell someone, say 10 years old is a median age,
sure,
to tell a child at 10, the person who was here yesterday or this morning mm-hmm. is now dead. And of course, the child wants to know how and why. And you say that it was in some terrible accident or some act of violence. Mm-hmm. Don't you think that most of us are protective
exactly.
and attempt to build some kind of a wall around our children, away from violent media and away from violent life?
Yes, absolutely. It is in our nature as parents to want to protect and to provide for our children. Those are some of the core essential components of being a parent, being a good parent. You want to protect your child from those things you just mentioned. However, you have to be able to speak the truth in love, and again, with the caveat being at a developmentally appropriate level to a child. So what you would tell a teenager about the truth of a violent or horrific death is going to look differently from what you would tell a 5-year-old or a 7-year-old or a 10-year-old. So you tell the truth in as simple and direct a way, and you do so in an environment that is safe and calm. So you try to avoid the shock factor and the grandiose nature of some of that violent media stuff that gets out there. I just recently read a book called The Only Child that was written from the perspective of a 6-year-old little boy, and the story was because of what goes on in our world, the school violence, and there was a shooter that had come into his school, and this story was told through the eyes of the 6-year-old. His older brother was killed in that violence. But being able to speak the truth to a child about what has happened, even if you cannot necessarily explain it in rational, logical terms, it's far better, because at that point then the grief experience that a child will go through is going to be more authentic. And children, differently than adults, are going to revisit their grief as they reach new developmental milestones. And so when a child has a death loss at the age of 5 or 7 and then reaches that young adolescence age, they're going to revisit that. So in this example, a little girl's mother dies from cancer, and she's 5. When she becomes a young adolescent girl, she's going to revisit her grief with her mom not there to go with that. When her first boyfriend breaks up with her and mom's not there, when she doesn't get in or gets into the college of her dreams, when she gets married and has her own child and her mom's not there, each of these new milestones, and that's part of the difference for children than for grown-ups, when that child reaches the age her mother was when her mother died, all of these are significant points in a child's life and in the development. So helping a child and their family unit understand that these are going to come, these are normal, to expect them, to be prepared for them in ways that you can be, to the best of your ability, allows a child to, in that new mental capacity that they have as they mature, then be able to revisit and work through the issues of grief and loss that they experience from that death that they had when they were so young.
No matter the cause of the death.
Right.
If a 7-year-old, say, if a 7-year-old is told that another 7-year-old in class has died, mm-hmm. is there not a vulnerability factor that 7-year-old you're speaking to, your 7-year-old, is concerned that it's going to happen to her?
Absolutely, and that's part of what we help the parents. So the program at the New Song Center is not exclusively for the children. And I'm so glad you asked, because it allows me to say grief affects the whole family. And so the wisdom of these founding ladies that brought New Song into being was to include the adults in the family as well, because we are not immune from our own grief experience. And so being able to help the adults in a family environment understand how children are grieving, and that my 7-year-old now is very clingy and wants to sleep in my bed with me at night, and may regress behaviorally instead of acting like the normal 7-year-old. They may have accidents and bedwetting, or they may have other go back to sucking their thumb, those kinds of things. And parents worry that, oh my gosh, my child is regressing. But when the adults are with other adults and they're guided through their support as well to learn and understand what is natural and normal for children, then they can be better prepared to support their children in the most healthy way they can.
Will those children who regress, should they be expected to get over it in time? Is it as simple as, it's just a matter of time?
Well, it is a matter of time, but it's not only a matter of time. Time certainly does help. But time alone does not help. This woman I spoke to this morning, it was a year ago that her husband died. And she's only reaching out to us now. Time without intentional work on our grief issues will still, it's like one of the founders of New Song taught me years ago. She says it's like putting your grief emotions in a Ziploc baggie, and not the cheap kind either, the really good one with the snap and the zipper and all those other things, and then shoving it in the back of your freezer. And ultimately, over the course of time, that bag's going to come plopping out of the freezer and fall on the ground, and all those emotions come popping back out at you again. It is a debt we must all pay to address the issues of grief and loss, the change in roles. If a child's older brother dies, is that child still a younger brother? If that was the oldest child, am I now the oldest child? If my parents are asked, how many children do you have? Do they say, I had four children, but one died? And then you get those funny looks. So the roles a child lives within in their family and in their world are changing as well.
Day-to-day conversation.
Yes, absolutely.
What about, honey, Eddie's gone to heaven?
Ah, yes.
That's the explanation. That's it. Next, it's time for dinner. Now, Eddie's gone to heaven. And for a lot of families, that's the most comfortable thing to say. It's the only thing they know how to say.
Exactly. And, you know, I am a woman of faith on my personal life. So saying that Eddie has gone to heaven is a very comforting expression to me as an adult Christian woman. However, for a young child, heaven is kind of like Walmart. It's a destination. And, you know, not plugging any particular business, but it's a destination. So when is Eddie coming back? You see, because concrete thinkers, if he's gone somewhere, mm-hmm. they're going to come back.
What's the answer to that?
The answer is you have to remind over and over that, you know, he has died. And we do not shy away from concrete language with children. The euphemisms, if I leave our listeners with any message at all, avoid euphemisms at all cost. They've not gone to sleep. They've not gone to heaven. They've not passed or passed over, or as my husband read once, flew into the loving arms of Jesus. Those kinds of things that we see in obituaries and such. For children, we need to be very concrete. His body stopped working, and there was no way the body could be made to work again.
This is The God Show, and you're listening because you discovered the Star Worldwide Networks. I'm Pat McMahon, and our guest is Lisa Schmidt, director of the New Song Center for Grieving Children. Since we have gone through so much of the show, about a half an hour of the show, without letting anybody know whether they're here in Phoenix or they're in Anchorage, Alaska, or Greenland, I think it's probably a good idea for them to know how to get in touch with you when they are as stuck for an answer as all of the folks that we've been talking about have been over the years.
Well, I would love for them to call me from wherever, and I've never gotten a call from Alaska, but I would be happy to take it. Our direct phone line right into the New Song Center is 480-951-8985.
951-8985.
And they can look us up on the hov.org website. So that's a great resource. We've got some literature and materials of resourcing that they can get right there on the website as well. And I'd also like to point your listeners to another resource, which is a national resource, and it's called the National Alliance for Grieving Children. It's people like me from all over the country and Canada now as well. And their website is childrengrieve.org. And they can connect there, look into that area for local resources in their home community, and to find out just exactly what may be available to them.
Is there a best book written by anybody that has done some kind of a Q&A for all the family members out there who are eventually going to face this if they haven't already?
I have no best book model that I could just spout off, because every circumstance is different and every family dynamic is different. Every family culture has its own nuances. So my recommendation would be to reach out to a real life person in your own community. And you can do so by calling me directly and I'll point you to those folks, or to call the National Alliance Children Grieve website, because the unique circumstances that your family may be facing can only be talked through in a live and personal kind of way. And so there are a number of books. There's an agency, there's a website called Centering Corporation. So Centering, C-E-N-T-E-R-I-N-G, C-O-R-P, Corp, .com, I think. And they have lots of books and materials that are sorted by how old your children are, the nature of the death, the circumstances in the family. There's just a ton of material out there.
Boy, is that helpful.
Yeah, absolutely.
And we're talking with Lisa Schmidt. That's S-C-H-M-I-T-T. But she'll still answer the phone if you misspell it. Lisa Schmidt, director of New Song Center for Grieving Children. And she's already given you her phone number. And would be delighted. And you know what? If you are uncomfortable speaking English, and you can just simply get your needs across on the most basic level, then call anyway, no matter what, because Lisa will find a way to communicate at 1-480-951-8985. And is there an email?
Yes.
Please.
Well, it's my first initial, L, and then my last name, S-C-H-M-I-T-T, at hov.org.
Some folks in different countries may find it a little bit more comfortable sometimes to just write a quick email.
Yes.
And they can get that translated from somebody.
Absolutely.
To communicate with Lisa Schmidt about children's grief.
And, Pat, we do have... they could go straight on the hov.org website. There's a way that they could submit a request there. And if it's in a language that I don't speak, which are many, we have translators at Hospice of the Valley that can translate anything. So whatever language it comes in at, we'll get it deciphered and get a response.
Okay, this is the category now that I really hope that you will make notes, okay? It's called Everything You Shouldn't Say to the child who is grieving or doesn't even really necessarily know how to grieve yet. And I'm going to give you an example right off the top of my head of something that happened to my family. My oldest son, now with his own children, but my oldest son, when he was in a scouting program, so he was 11 or 12 years old, went to a memorial service for his scoutmaster. Now, by itself, you must know that scouts probably feel a real closeness to the scoutmaster. There's a leadership thing there. And so they're in church, and this, I'm only going to say that he was the minister of the church, because I don't know whether it was a priest or a rabbi. But it isn't particularly important, because I would just consider him to be foolish, no matter what his title was. Because one of the first things that he said to the assembled group, and the church was large and packed with parents, grandparents, and their scouting kids. And one of the first things that he said was, God needed your scoutmaster.
Hold me back.
Lisa is right now doing doing, we're not talking about vulgar hand gestures, just gestures consisting of get that guy out of the pulpit. God needed your scoutmaster and your father, because his kids were there, and your husband. God needed him more than you did.
That would be one of the top things on my list never to say.
I wasn't,
pretty much never.
I wasn't in the church. My son came back from the church so distraught.
Mm-hmm. I believe it.
Talking to his mother and me.
Imagine the message to these children about the nature of God. And this is the God show, so we can talk about that. But
please do.
What I mean, and my husband, who did die earlier this year, was also a pastor, Presbyterian pastor.
Yes.
But clergy and ministers get very little training on the subject of grief and loss when it comes to children, I might say, in most religious organizations. But the very nature of God, in my understanding, that he would take someone away and needed them more than a 7 or 10 or 15-year-old child needs my dad, is in my humble opinion, Pat, not a message that I would want to leave children with in terms of how they understand the nature of God.
Well, I don't like that God.
Right. God took him. I'm going to be afraid of God. God might come down and take me next.
And the ultimate power trip.
Right.
I've decided, right?
Yeah.
And listen, I know that there are people right now who are listening, and I appreciate the fact that within the structure of your faith, you believe that God does make those decisions. But don't tell an assemblage of young people that God decided that it was more important that he had him, that he had this, this leader.
Because he was such a wonderful man. That's usually what goes on afterwards, is that this person led such an exemplary life that God needed him with him, which then tells young people, well, if I lead an exemplary life, then it's going to be cut short. I mean, there's all kinds of problems with that. So that would go on my list of things never to say to children.
What else?
Other things would be, I know how you feel. I know how you feel. Yeah, that's a big one.
For adults, too.
For anybody. Most of the things that I say, don't say. I mean, don't ever say to anyone under any circumstances. I know how you feel, because no, you don't know how I feel. Even if you've had somebody you love die, you still don't know how I'm feeling.
But I've just been invited to somebody's home for a wake or a memorial service, a private service that consisted of family and friends gathering together. And I am now confronting the wife, the mother, the father, the children. What do I say instead of, I know how you feel?
Well, but here's an interesting concept, and I know we're on a talk show, right? A conversation right now.
Yeah.
But what's wrong with not saying anything?
Hooray.
I mean, seriously, sometimes there are no words that can adequately express what needs to be expressed. Sometimes sitting shoulder to shoulder with someone you love with no words can be more powerful than anything. Or maybe just saying, wow, this is tough.
What about the standard, if there's anything I can do?
Ugh, that's another one that's kind of innocuous as well. And every one of these things that you're bringing up, I have said myself. So I am guilty as charged. But I would encourage, and people in my line of work would encourage, be specific. Say, you know, I would love to bring you dinner on Tuesday night. Would Thursday be better? Be specific, be concrete, and then do what you say. And here's the other thing. That first week or month that happens, there's a flurry of stuff going on. That's fine. Sometimes the best thing you can do is wait. And then 2 months later or 3 months later, you can be the one that picks up the phone and says, you know, Pat, I was thinking about you today. I know it's been a few months. How are you doing today? You know, that question of how are you doing? My daughter, who is grieving her father's death, she looks at people and goes, how do you think I'm doing? My dad is dead. I'm doing lousy. So, but if you just add the one word today, how are you doing today, Pat? That frames it in a way that, you know, today's an okay day. Yesterday, however, was really horrible.
What age parameter should there be in the judgment of an adult when you're considering inviting a child, telling the truth to the child, inviting a child into the hospital room of a family member who's dying?
There is no age limit. None. As long as the people that those children know well and trust adequately prepare them. And oftentimes, in the case of Hospice of the Valley where I work, maybe one of the professional staff members, so that the child can anticipate what they're going to be facing. So there are no surprises. The same thing applies for children and funerals or memorial services or celebrations of life, whatever we now choose to call those experiences. Allowing children to be involved and present is such a critical factor, because you don't get do-overs with these situations. As long as you're not forcing a child against their will and, you know, cramming it down their throat, so to speak, but you calmly and carefully prepare them so they know what they're going to see when they get there and what they can expect, and that they're allowed to be present for as long as they're comfortable and then leave when they're ready. Same is true for funerals and celebrations of life. There is no too young to go, ever.
Explain an open casket to a child.
The body has stopped working. We go back again to a child, what age? But we have to be concrete. One of the things that we use at New Song is a book of anatomy, and we talk about all the various body systems, from the respiratory system to the circulatory system to the bone system.
Really?
All those things, yeah. Because kids want to know, especially children 8 to 10 years of age, they're very curious. Are they in pain? Are they suffering? What's happening with the body? They want to know these things. So by talking to the child about how come the body's not working, was it cancer, the cancer cells, what happened to the body that caused the body to stop working, and that the body is there, but they're not breathing any longer, they don't need to eat or drink any longer, the skin is going to feel differently than it does when you're alive, because it's not going to be warm like we are. So again, explaining all of those things, eyes will be closed, but they're not sleeping. That's another win. We don't prefer to say to children that daddy's gone to sleep, sleeping the eternal rest, those kinds of things that we say.
He's not
sleeping.
No, daddy's dead.
Daddy's died. His body has stopped working. Because children come to us afraid to go to sleep at night because they're afraid they're never going to wake up again.
But, Mommy, I don't want to go up and look at that family member in the casket.
Then they shouldn't be forced to. They should be allowed to, but they should never be forced. Because that traumatizes the child all over again. But again, most children want to do that sort of thing when they're adequately prepared and they're given a calm, relaxed environment.
So many different kinds of grief and so many different expressions. Probably an infinite number of expressions, because mm-hmm. we're all individually different.
Yes.
So tell me about the difference in the grief of a child when his or her peer dies. Let's not talk about relatives, but it's another student from school.
Yeah.
To most of us, unthinkable, inconceivable. Children don't die. Yes, they do.
Yeah, unfortunately, they do die.
And that child of yours just went to school. Where's Jimmy? He's dead.
Yes. We go into schools all the time, Pat. That's one of the things that New Song Center does as a community outreach and a community service. Again, we don't charge ever for these services. Mm-hmm. And I believe most of the agencies that you can find in your own community would also do the same, because that's where kids spend most of their time. We had a student in Gilbert at the Rancho Solano Private School District down in that community who went home from school on a Friday and by Monday had died, a series of medical circumstances. And we went down to that school and we met with the faculty, we met with the administrators, we were in the classroom with the other students, talking to the students about what had happened and explaining to them and allowing them to talk to us about their other experiences of death. You'd be amazed what children will
tell
you.
Were they conversational
Absolutely.
About it?
Absolutely. Absolutely they were. So again, what we bring to children is what they'll give back to us, is that openness and honesty, and what we can learn from our kiddos is remarkable.
When mom and dad are forced into making this decision, they didn't ask the children permission because they knew better. They knew that this medical procedure had to be done, and they come back from the vets.
Isn't that a wonderful learning opportunity for children? If we were less death phobic in our day-to-day living, when it came to a pet death, or you see a dead bug on the floor in the playground, if we could begin introducing the concept of all living things have a life cycle, and if that were part of the reading library in the child's books in their bedroom or in the school libraries, and they began to recognize the seasons of life, trees, well, in other parts of the world besides Arizona, they have spring, summer, fall, and winter, but you get my drift. The idea being that there is a life cycle, and some life cycles are longer, others are shorter, but introducing the concept of living things do have a termination date.
But that's when you have time in advance. Toby just got hit by a car, and my child just got back from school and found out from us that Toby's dead.
Mm-hmm.
How do you handle that? That is an entity that is as close to that child as
Absolutely.
Anybody.
Absolutely. And when children come to New Song, oftentimes, you cannot segregate one death loss from any other loss experience. Children will talk about their pets who have died. They will talk about other loss experiences. And so to be able to say to the child, just like I said about human deaths, be honest, be straightforward. If you don't have an explanation that it makes sense, be honest about that. I don't understand. Toby got out of the backyard and ran into the street and the car hit him. Be straightforward, honest, and tell the truth. Or maybe Toby didn't wake up that morning, went to bed the night before, and something transpired and the dog died during the night. I don't know what happened, honey, but his body stopped working. As simple and straightforward as you possibly can be.
Oh, but how traumatic for the
child.
Oh,
totally so. Totally so.
And what if that child then goes upstairs, closes the door, and won't come out?
Oh, well, I think, again, allowing a child to express their grief in ways that's natural and normal, and then also being present for the child. Don't try to force it, but obviously not allowing a child to isolate for a prolonged or extended period of time. But we all need time to get ourselves together, even children.
But how much time? How much time is too much time for children or adults?
Well, and you know, there's no black or white answer. I can't give you that because grief, you know what the worst grief is, Pat? It's my grief. You know how long it takes to get through it? Whatever it takes. And studies have shown that normal, whatever that is, healthy processing of grief of an expected untraumatic death could be as much as 2 to 3 years. If it's a complicated traumatic death loss, it could be 5 to 7 years. But it takes what it takes. And I think a parent looking at a child who begins to exhibit behaviors that are out of normal for that child, a parent knows. Trust your instincts.
There are so many other questions. And so obviously the really good questions are not all going to come from me, because we've got people right now who say, wait a minute, what about this situation?
Call us.
What about?
Call us.
Remind everybody.
Our phone number is 480-951-8985, or send us an email at hov.org. There's a place there that sends an inquiry directly into my inbox, and I will personally respond.
And I will bet you that no matter how different you think your question may be, I'll bet you that they've heard something similar. But if not, you've enhanced their lives because now they have more information.
Absolutely.
At New Song, the New Song Center for Grieving Children. And that's a part of the God Show for this day or night, wherever you are on this planet Earth, sharing loss just because that's the way life is. We hope we've made it better on the God Show.